Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Welcome to the fourth anniversary of the HR Power Hour Show. And that's correct, ladies and gentlemen. It has been 4 years since your host has been on the air talking to you about what makes HR tick, what is exciting about the HR world, and keeping you informed of the trends and topics that people want to learn about here on the HR Power Hour. I want to thank, right up front, my producer, Debbie Davis, for putting up with me for 4 years. Yes, 4 years, an amazing time, an amazing run. Well, we're going to have a special show today. Each year, we typically go back and look at the year and do a run-through of the entire year of what the topics were and what really was important to you. This year, we're going to do it a little bit different. We've picked 16 shows that highlight some of the current trends and topics that is really critical to your HR success. And hopefully you learned from those topics over the last year. So we're going to start right up front. We're going to start with July 25th, 2015. Our producer, Debbie Davis, does a TV show called Mind Your Own Business TV. And she asked myself and Rick Dacry, president of Dacry Associates, to be on her show to talk about recruiting trends today. So we rebroadcast that topic because I thought you guys would really love to hear the recruiting trends. Some are still very relevant today. Here we go.
I agree with you. There are going to be people who are going to say, I want to work for a company.
Right.
And companies view them as that core that they need who provide those essential services. Yep. In a company. If I'm in a manufacturing firm, I need somebody to operate and maintain the machinery.
Right.
But I might not need the HR or the marketing department. I might not even need the payroll either.
I can outsource those. So do we see the future as a bunch of little outsourcing pieces to many companies?
That is a trend. There's no question that outsourcing has become a solution to small businesses. I'd be honest, it would be large businesses. If it can save them money and time, at the end of the day, the bottom line, mm-hmm. is you need to save money.
Right.
Because with that money, you can hire more people, you can expand your business, you can make that happen. So we are seeing outsourcing being a solution to a lot of companies today. You know, Rick said something earlier. He talked about the training aspect mm-hmm. of teaching and managing your business. Bringing people in to look at all that really does make sense. You know, is it something that you can outsource? You don't know what you don't know.
Right.
So really, we're seeing, you know, the C-suite level, CEOs, presidents, and CFOs, look at how they can save money and how they can really go out in the marketplace and make a difference in mm-hmm. terms of the bottom line of an organization. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. It takes time. It's research. But at the end of the day, it really does save them a lot of time and money. And you don't have to stay so up to date because we're talking about HR.
Yeah.
We talked about earlier. It's always changing. It's always evolving. There's more compliance. There's more rules. You know, companies want to just make a widget.
Yeah.
They just want to do something.
Yeah.
They really don't want to get bogged down in all this craziness, as they call it, mm-hmm. some of them. And the reality is that's what we do. We handle craziness.
Yeah.
That's our mission in life.
But there's another aspect to that, and I agree with David in terms of the solving of these particular problems here, to making sure you're compliant and to save money. But ideally, if you're training your people properly, they're not only complying, but you're increasing levels of productivity. Mm-hmm. And that's the key, and that's how you enjoy profits. If your employees are continuously productive, in good training and coaching of employees,
right.
increases overall productivity. If we increase overall productivity, yes, it goes directly to the bottom line.
Blooper.
And if... Do you want me to do it again?
Yes.
Thank you, Rick, and thank you, Debbie, for having us on your show. All right, let's talk about the next topic. This was August 22nd of 2015. The topic is HR and medical marijuana.
We had Patricia Rossi, the CEO of a Wellness Connection of Maine, on, and she talked about what HR really needs to know about the new medical marijuana laws and the trends that are happening in the medical marijuana industry. You know there's a ballot initiative coming up. So here's Patricia talking about HR and medical marijuana.
When the board and you have the discussions about the future in terms of looking across the state or across New England in general, mm-hmm. where do you see some of the challenges in terms of growth? Is it in talent? Is it in operations? Is it in, you know, hiring or other areas? What are some of the challenges that you're seeing, other than the regulatory side, which will always be a challenge at this point?
I think it's being able to... to foresee what will happen, because the regulatory background is defining who we are and how we operate, and we know for sure that legalization will happen, because that's what we see in other states. But what form will it take, and how will we have to adapt our operational structure is challenging. We're kind of forecasting in uncharted territories. We don't really have any benchmark to base our assumptions on. So it's being able to edge our bet in the best way possible, but also be proactive. We're currently expanding our production facility, so we're definitely betting on the future. We see a great increase in the demand for cannabis, so we're trying to be proactive about it. But it's a little challenging.
Blooper.
Okay. Don't you dare make that a point. Nope, that is not going to be.
Okay, I won't make that a
blooper. No, that is not a blooper.
But it would be a great
blooper. It would be a great blooper, but no,
but
I can't.
I won't do that.
Yes, okay.
Thank you, Patricia. And now I want to talk to you about the show that happened on September 19th, 2015. We had a great guest. He's the chief HR officer at IDEX Laboratories. Giovanni Twigg was on, and he talked about the role of HR in business today. It's still incredibly relevant. So here's Gio providing his insight into what the role of HR is in business today.
Some of the regulations are incredibly important, right?
Oh, of course.
There
you have to have
to
some.
Protect work,
of course.
To protect the workforce,
of course.
Right?
Of course.
And right there is an opportunity for HR to step in, right, is to partner with the regulators, right, and to help structure regulations that would advance the opportunities for employees within the workplace rather than constrain it. We see this sort of like them and us. And I think we can do a much better job by bringing the two together in a constructive dialogue, right? So you say, we hate these regulations that's been done on us. Well, you know, why don't we participate in their construction? And then that construction would probably more suit the agenda of having employees within the workplace engaged in innovation, entrepreneurship, and advancing the economy.
Yeah, I do think it is about being more participatory in the process. I think that, and maybe this is just something of an observation from my part, I do think that HR is a little more passive as an overall group.
Yes.
Rather than, I say that because I think that they're a little more scared to do things wrong.
Yeah.
Right? Would you agree with that statement?
Absolutely.
And they're, you know, they're risk averse. The lawyers are telling them, you know, wait, don't do this, don't do that, be very careful. And so I think that there's less of an opportunity for them to rebel rouse and to, you know, to get in somebody's challenge and to really show that. I mean, are you seeing the same thing? That's my perception, at least.
You hitting one of my pet peeves, right? You're pushing a button here. And I've seen this. And I'm passionate about the HR profession, right? I chose to be in this profession. I don't want to sound critical, but there are people within HR that loves to take the spectator seat. They love to comment versus participate in this sport. And this, frankly, is a participatory sport, right? Mm-hmm. You see so many HR people with concepts. You know, I go around, I talk to HR people, and some of them have concepts of HR versus my question always to them is, have you actually taken this up? Have you seen the results? Have you changed? And even if you haven't, and you've been going at this for 2-3 years, give up. Try something differently. Because it's not productive to you, nor the employer, nor the employee, by keep commenting on a specific, you know, topic from the side angle without jumping in and doing something about it. And I'm all about jumping in and doing something about it. You know, the Sheryl Sandberg concept of lean in. Mm-hmm. And all HR, you know, you often hear, if only we had a seat at the table. And for me, it is not about getting invited to take a seat at the table. It's about leaning in, earning that seat at the table.
Blooper. You're good. You should have your own radio show.
I should. I really. I got to come up with a... Somebody's got to have a show. It's got to be somewhat good somewhere, someday. Maybe they'll listen to this, come up with some ideas. Thank you, Gio. And now we're going to be talking about the show that aired on October 31st, 2015. Jim Reedy, employment attorney, as she and Finney. And he talks about a very relevant topic, drug and alcohol testing in the workplace today. Some of you do drug and alcohol testing, some of you don't. But it's very important to understand why you should or shouldn't. So here's Jim.
If you had to poll most HR professionals, they would say in some way, shape, or form, they forbid the use or distribution of drugs and alcohol in the workplace. And to another level, they say things like, and also you can't be impaired at work, whether it's prescription drugs, illicit drugs, or alcohol. And so in varying ways, most employers have some form of a drug and alcohol policy. The reality is that things have changed, and really in the last 10 to 15 years, we've seen a pretty significant change in the workplace, and that is the number of companies that are testing for drugs and alcohol, those that are required to or those that choose to, the increase in number of people that are testing positive, and sometimes it's fueled by or belief that the rise in marijuana use and prescription drug use, and then issues associated with some states, as you say, are changing their laws. And there are more than 30 states now that have approved medical marijuana. And then I think there are now 4 states that approve recreational marijuana and the District of Columbia. That goes beyond decriminalizing marijuana. That is, you can have, for recreational use and for sale, marijuana. So it's similar to alcohol in that regard, that it's legal.
When you say legal, is it not still true that under federal law, it is still illegal?
And there is the rub. So whether we're talking about medical marijuana in some 30 states or the states that also have recreational marijuana, and when the employer goes to insist upon their drug policy, drug or alcohol policy, but more particularly their drug policy, and say, we do not permit people that if we test and find marijuana in your system, then you're subject to discipline or even termination or not getting hired. And the challenge to that is, but wait, I have a prescription from my physician, or it's legal to imbibe on the weekend. And the response is, and consistently now in the courts still, yeah, but we rely on federal law. And under federal law, it is still considered to be an illegal substance and therefore not protected. There have been cases in Michigan, Rhode Island, and a few other states that it actually has been upheld that the employer relying upon federal law can still insist that that is an illegal or prohibited substance.
Blooper.
When I said Australia, where the hell did that come from? It wasn't even in my brain. It just, what the mouth came out with and what the brain, they weren't combined.
You were possessed.
It was unbelievable. Thank you, Jim. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB on 100.5 FM, and you're listening to the 4th anniversary show. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
Welcome back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour 4th Anniversary Radio Show, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. We're going through some of the top topics that really mattered in 2015 and 2016. That's right, our 4th Anniversary Show here. So let's continue. It's now November 21st, 2015. Deborah Weiss Ford calls in and she talks about fearless firing. HR has to do it sometimes. It's never fun, but it's something that you really need to be prepared for. So let's listen to Deb talk about fearless firing.
Well, a recent study showed that over 55% of employment litigation losses for employers was due to poor or no documentation to support the decision to discipline or terminate. So with that in mind, the importance of proper documentation, proper disciplinary action, the proper separation process is just critical in the employment world.
Well, you know, I got to say, I always tell people at the beginning, people always tell me, they go, well, we're an employee at will state. I can fire anyone anytime I want. I don't even have to follow anything.
You do hear that a lot, and it is true that most states are employment at will, which, you know, for the audience means that the employer or the employee may end the employment relationship at any time and for any or no reason. So the problem with that is that employers tend to think that that means that they may fire whenever they feel like it. And there are just so many exceptions to that basic rule that employers need to understand that there are both statutory exceptions and there are tort exceptions to that, meaning that you really need to be careful and understand the law before you go ahead and terminate.
So let's talk about those two exceptions right up front, statutory, tort. Define that a little bit more so people understand.
Sure. So for statutory, you can't terminate an at-will employee in violation of a specific state or federal statute. So in other words, Title VII, ADA, whistleblower, FMLA. So what it means is that if you have an employee and you want to terminate that employee for poor performance, but I look at the personnel file and I see that there are average evaluations. Maybe the employee received a 2% pay increase in the last month or so. That gives the employee the argument that, no, you really terminated me because I'm a whistleblower or because I'm over the age of 40 or because it's a Title VII protected class, sex, national origin, something along those lines. So the employee argues that it's really because of my protected category, and the employer doesn't have enough justification in the file to be able to support the decision that it's really because of poor performance.
What about that first 90 days, Deb? What if somebody says, well, look, I just hired them, and they're only within a 90-day period. Can't I just get rid of them if they don't work out?
So that's a good question. And many employers will have what's called an introduction period, used to be called a probationary period, but today it's more commonly known as the introduction period. And again, I think employers are a bit misguided with that, thinking that because they have that 90-day period, they may terminate for any reason whatsoever. So the 90-day period really doesn't have any legal significance. You're still an employee at will, whether that's day one or day 91. And I think employers often have a false sense of security that if they terminate in that introduction period, they're safe. But it's still the same issue of not having proper documentation and allowing an employee to argue that the real reason for termination is statutory or a violation of public policy.
Blooper.
That's on the no. That's on the ha. Hoodababa.
Woo!
Thank you, Deb. All right, we're going to December.
12th, 2015. A very, very relevant topic for the holiday. Religion in the workplace. Doug Currier, Tony Alvarez from Verrill Dana come in, and they talk about this important topic. HR needs to pay attention, and they need to know what to do. So let's listen to Doug and Tony talk about religion in the workplace.
The concept of reasonable accommodation is not unique to just the area of religious discrimination, and most people are familiar with it in the area of disability discrimination and combining workplace, or not workplace, but just injuries, health conditions, and the like. The reasonable accommodation standard for religion is a little bit different. It basically says an employer needs to be willing to make accommodations to allow an employee to be able to practice their religious beliefs. And that's very fact-specific as to what's reasonable under the circumstances. You don't have to make an accommodation as an employer if it's considered an undue hardship. What's interesting is to, I guess, to lawyers anyway, is that what's an undue hardship is sort of a lower standard in the area of religious accommodation as opposed to disability accommodation. And so if there's minimal burden that an employer can show created by the you know, the need to accommodate, then it doesn't have to provide that accommodation. What we're finding, though, is as there's more and more litigation, we're getting a better sense that the courts are, you know, expecting employers to do more and more to accommodate, that they feel as though it is not unreasonable to expect employers to do quite a bit to allow employees to come to work and still be able to practice their religious beliefs. Essentially, though, to show that you can't accommodate, you need to be able to demonstrate that the accommodation is a health and safety risk, that it adds a cost that is of some significance. It doesn't have to be huge, but some significance, that it creates some inefficiencies, interferes with productivity, things along those lines. And as I said, what we're seeing, more and more courts are declaring that things that employees are requesting that employers do aren't rising to the level of creating that burden, and therefore employers are being required to do things that otherwise they thought before they never would have to do.
Blooper.
All right, give me an intro, and then you are free to move about the country.
Oh, what now? Free to move around the country?
Yeah. Oh, you weren't listening?
I was not. I'm shocked. Attention at all. No. Nope. But you are still the best producer ever, Deb. Okay. What are we doing?
The intro.
Thank you, Tony and Doug. Okay, we're going to move into 2016. Again, it's our fourth anniversary show, and we're talking about the topics that matter to you during our last year of broadcast. So it's January 2016. Anne-Marie Story from Rudman & Winchell came in, and she talked about, my gosh, it seems so relevant for 2016, politics in the workplace. It's only going to get worse, ladies and gentlemen, as the election is coming up. This is one you really need to listen to. So, Anne-Marie, take it away. So, tell me about what employers can do if it disrupts the workplace.
I think the best advice for employers is to just step back and treat it as they would any other performance or disciplinary-related issue. And so I think as opposed to concentrating on the basis of the argument, they just want to deal with the behavior. And so if somebody has one button on and somebody doesn't like it, or somebody saw a bumper sticker in the parking lot that they disagree with, that's fine. They can have their conversations during break time or any other time on their own. But if they engage in behavior that disrupts the workplace, the employer should be able to apply its regular performance-related disciplinary policy.
How about when it comes to, like, issues, not just the candidate, but issues, and people are looking to raise awareness about the minimum wage or about medical or about marijuana use, which is going to be on the ballot here in 2016. These are issues in which people start try to, you know, get support in the workplace, talk quietly amongst one another and try to garner support. How can employers do anything about that?
Well, this is an area where I think employers have to be very careful because, as I'm sure you know, and most employers out there know, There's been an awful lot of activity from the NLRB in the last couple of years about workplace behavior. Even non-unionized workplaces are subject to Section 7, and employees have rights to engage in certain conversations, concerted activity. And so anything like that, that an employer has to be very careful about inappropriately inhibiting discussions that could be related to concerted activity or the rights of employees. And so, again, I think you want to take it back to performance-based actions. And so if it's merely a matter of people engaging in conversation during break time, let it go. Even if they're having an argument, or as long as it's not disruptive to the workplace, I think an employer has to be very careful about trying to control the topic or the subject matter.
Blooper.
And you're listening to WLOB FM News Talk. Don't know what the hell I'm saying, Debbie. Why did you change that on me today?
It's okay, I'll cut and paste.
Thanks, Anne Marie. And now we're going to talk about the voice of purpose. On January 30th, we had Louis Efron. He's a former HR executive with Tesla. And he's going to talk about how to find a job, career, and a life you love. That's right, the voice of purpose. Louis, tell us how.
In reality, everybody has to make a living. And I think the ultimate circumstance is where you can be aligned in a job and or career, whatever you're doing, whether it be your own business or working for someone else, where you can be playing to your purpose. You could be playing to your passion. You could be aligning with your strengths and also getting paid to do it. And I think the people that really find that magic key are the people that pursue their purpose and their passion, their strengths, and the money follows. So I think if you lead with the money, and we all, as you mentioned, we all have to make money. So there's times you have to make decisions. I mean, I love the arts, but I had a switch because I ultimately wanted to have a home and a family, which I have now. And I couldn't afford to do that. And that was part of my mission and purpose as well, is to, you know, raise two beautiful daughters now. And I needed that as part of my life. So I think you need to look at your 360-degree view of everything that fits into that mission and purpose of what you're trying to do. And that includes, things in your personal life, not only work. It's about living a life, not a job. And one of my favorite quotes is, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. So I think if you find that, the money follows. And the people, you always give an example, for example, the Richard Bransons of the world. This is a guy who, when you watch his videos or you watch any interviews with him, this guy, he's loving life. He's in the right position, the right alignment in what he should be doing in life. And he's had huge financial success as a result of it. And I'm not saying everybody's going to have that type of financial success, but you'll have the success you want in life and the money you need in life if you find that space where all this comes together. Again, your purpose, your passion, your strengths, and then the money does follow. But you've got to be realistic. I mean, you just can't meander through life and hang on to it to the detriment of your ability to eat and to support your family if you have it, or keep a roof over your head. So that's what I was trying to do with this book, is put some strategy behind it. So an actual plan. I think if you need to put actions behind what you're trying to do, especially when you're trying to follow something as gray. When people talk about purpose, there's not. A lot of people think it's a very airy fairy type of concept, but it's real, and it produces actually results for you in your life and in organizations. But you need to have strategy behind it, like anything. You need to guide it. You need to look at the whole picture and make sure that you're satisfying all your needs, and that financial need is a requirement in life. And so that's why I think strategy is key behind this.
Blooper.
We'll be talking about the subject of, and I don't have it up on my screen, so I can't tell you the exact wording, but I'll be there in just a minute, so please stand by. It seems really, really important to tell you what it is, so we're going to have that right for you shortly. Please stand by. Your listening is very important to us. Thank you, Louis. You're listening to the HR Power Hour's 4th Anniversary Show on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we will be right back.
Yeah. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour's fourth anniversary show. I want to really thank you, the audience, for being there each and every week, listening and hopefully learning and taking a tidbit away from each show. You know, I cannot be remiss and not thank the sponsors that are making today's show and all the shows of each and every year possible for you. Vero Dana, Attorneys at Law. Jackson Lewis Law Firm. All we do is work. Redmond Winchell, Counselors at Law. Sheehan Finney, the business law firm. StrategicHR.com. With the Main HR Convention, Strategic HR Convention, and Comp Summit. And then JobsInTheUS.com, your employment resource. The next show is Kevin Hancock from Hancock Lumber, CEO and President. And he has a new book called Not for Sale. This was on February 6th, 2016. So, Kevin, talk to us about your book, Not for Sale, Finding Center in the Land of Crazy Horse.
Yeah, the title, we have some fun with the title because a lot of people see the book and they say, oh, that's so nice, it's free. And I say, no, that's the title of the book. It's not for sale. So the book chronicles a series of trips that I ended up taking to the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in the southwest corner of South Dakota starting in the fall of 2012. And I started going there after I lost my voice as a way to kind of do something just for me outside of my roles. I've always loved the American West. And I've always loved American history. I used to teach American history before I came to work at Hancock Lumber. And I was particularly interested in the second half of the 19th century when America's Western expansion ran into the Plains Indians. And I was in an airport in August of 2012 and picked up a National Geographic, and the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation was on the cover. And it's kind of the poster child for big, disenfranchised, statistically challenged Indian reservations in the West. And I said to my wife, Allison, I'm going to go there. I want to see what life is like there today. And I got out there, and I just really got caught up by the place, the beauty of the place, the people that lived there, the history, the kind of terrible set of cards they were dealt and are still dealing with. And the title really is symbolic of a couple things. One, for me, it was a chance to express myself beyond my role. So it's like I'm not for sale, and that, yeah, I have a role of running a company, and that's my job, and I care about it, but it's not the totality of who I am. So that was one part of Not for Sale. And then the second part of Not for Sale is this is a group, a community on the reservation that is also not for sale. So in 1980, the Lakota ended up in the Supreme Court, who ruled that their Fifth Amendment rights had been violated when their land was taken back in the 1870s without just compensation. And the Supreme Court tabulated, went back and calculated the value of the land and awarded them the money. And the Lakota said, no, you don't understand, our land's not for sale. And they refused to take the money, which still sits in trust to this day. It's now well over $1 billion. So they weren't for sale. I wasn't for sale. So that was kind of the impetus for the title.
Blooper.
We've been talking to the I just blew that line. Did
again?
You hear me, Blue Lewis? Did you hear that? That was live.
You sounded amazing.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah. That's my new. That'll be a blooper. She'll put it on,
that
I guarantee.
Will be a blooper.
I know it. All right. Thank you, Kevin. And of course, you can go to KevinHancock.com to find out about his book. All right. On February 20th, 2016, we brought on David Stearns, president of Dale Carnegie Maine, and he talked about employee engagement trends in 2016. Very relevant, very current. So let's listen to Dave now.
We found that there's three clusters of behaviors that significantly impact engagement. And one, of course, is that and this was no surprise, but that one of the keys to engagement is the relationship with the immediate manager. And that was no new news, except that we dug a little deeper into the emotional content of engagement and found out that unless a manager is known as a caring manager, and I put the word in quotes, caring, the relationship doesn't get as strong and as deep as it needs to for employee engagement. And an engaged employee is someone that will use their discretionary time and energy to further the cause of either their team or the organization or the mission of the organization. And we found in our research that 29% of the people in the general business population, 29% of the employees were engaged. That's one out of three, which wasn't good news. The bigger percentage, the 45%, was the what we called partially engaged. And by that, we found that they would show up and do what was expected, but that was it. They would get their check and they would go home. The most startling revealed that 26% in the general business population, 26% of the employees were disengaged. And by that, it meant that they were actively sabotaging their own company, either through rumors or gossip or even intentionally slowing things down. So it was quite startling, but a lot of it was the main driver was the relationship with the immediate manager.
Blooper.
Is that the right title, associate partner?
That sounds like a great title to me.
But that's not the real title. Sorry. Let's go back. Whoops.
I just got you in deep trouble, buddy. Added
on to the blueprint.
I am known to laugh at inappropriate times, so yeah, let's try to.
Right.
Let's
just try to. I got to get my serious face back on here. Okay. Thank you, Dave. Let's talk about what happened in March 12, 2016 on the HR Power Hour 4th Anniversary Radio Show. We listened to Deborah Weiss Ford from Jackson Lewis Law Firm, and she talked about a very relevant topic, and that is retaliation claims. You don't want to deal with them, so let's listen now on how to prevent them.
And I'm sure we'll talk in this hour about training of supervisors, because I do think that what happens in part is that supervisors aren't very familiar with retaliation laws. It appears to be a more amorphous and vague type of topic, and often trainings don't encompass retaliation issues. And since it is now the highest percentage of cases that are brought in discrimination laws, it really behooves employers to make sure that managers are trained regularly on retaliation issues so that managers can identify it and understand that when they take adverse actions, that may have an implication on retaliation statutes.
Blooper.
I know. I was trying to make it a little more sexy.
I was trying to give it a little bit of kick. It was like, yeah. You know, sometimes I like saying things that just off the cuff, and people go, did you say that? Thank you, Deb. All right. We had a very exclusive show that happened on April 2nd, 2016. We were honored to have Brian Dixon, Senior Vice President for SHRM, come on the show and really become unplugged. He talked about everything going on with SHRM. He opened up to the audience about what had happened with HRCI. He opened up and talked about current trends and why SHRM is so relevant today. It was a great show. It was one of our top listened to shows in 2016. So let's listen to some highlights now.
Really, what we need to do is continually evolve and adapt in order to continue to serve well HR professionals and the HR profession as a whole. And that really is our mission, to support the professionals and to advance the profession. And in order for us to do that effectively, we need to be looking out at the business environment, looking out at the trends and developments that are impacting employers and impacting our members, and make sure that we are ahead of the curve, anticipating their needs and really meeting the needs of our membership. And I think that the biggest trend, the biggest change that we see in the environment over the last several years is that more and more is being asked of the HR professional. You know, it's not enough today for our members to be the compliance cops, to be the technical experts on all things related to HR. What we see is a growing need for our members to act as business leaders in addition to technical experts. And that really has driven a lot of the thinking here at SHRM and a lot of the changes that we've implemented over the last several years.
Blooper.
And we're back. And you're, whoa, Debbie, let's start that over. How? Okay. Let's try that again.
Go.
Thank you, Brian, for being so candid. On April 9th, we had a special guest, Bob Montgomery Rice. He's the president and CEO of Bangor Savings Bank, came in and talked to us about the value of HR in an organization. You may not know this, but Bob had a career in HR, and now he's president and CEO. An inspiration to HR professionals out there. So let's listen to Bob talk about the value of HR.
You know, when you're in HR, you're focused on a lot of different things, but really in the end, you're trying to hire, you know, the right people who are going to fit the culture and the values of the organization. You're going to try to put them in position to be successful. And in the end, really what you're trying to do is make sure that not only do they have those tools, but that they're happy in what they're doing, they're energized, they're committed to the company, they're committed to the customers. If you can put all those things together, you've got a successful formula. And that's the only way you're going to grow an organization. The only way you're going to have a successful organization is if you have the right people. You make sure that they're happy so that they can do their job, which in the end is taking care of customers.
Blooper.
So that was what is what about that. So listen to it. So what I, oh, yeah. So that's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you, Bob. That was very inspirational. You're listening to the HR Power Hour's 4th anniversary radio show. We're going to be talking about the show that happened on April 23rd, 2016. And it's about new research on HR best practices. David Plink from Top Employers Institute and Kerry Morgan from HRCI were our guests. Let's hear some of the results of that research.
Well, the most exciting thing, there's actually three primary takeaways, and I think the one that's the most exciting is stock price performance. So for organizations that have more than five HRCI certified employees, there is a 95% increase over a five-year period in stock price performance as opposed to the control benchmark metric of 38% increase in those same type of companies. So we see that as a huge benefit. And one of the things that when we presented these results, we had HR guru Dave Ulrich with us. And he said, wow, this is so impressive that it almost feels unbelievable. So even if you cut that 95% increase in half, it's still a very impressive number to think that, you know, having HRCI certificates helping guide the strategies of your organization can have that kind of impact on stock price performance.
Bloomberg.
And he's going to be talking about his sixth book.
That is a riot.
Okay, you can use that one. That was a good one. I'll admit that, because that was real.
Blooper.
Thank you, David and Carrie. On May 21st, 2016, we had the president and CEO of Dale Carnegie Corporate, Joe Hart, was on, and he talked about leadership skills and why Dale Carnegie is more relevant today than ever. Let's listen to some highlights of that show.
Yeah, so I think you're really touching on two things, Dave, right? One is the relevance of what we do for the millennial generation, and the second is how do we work on the brand and communicating what we do in a way that helps people see it. So as it relates to the first part, I mean, I can say firsthand, I've seen you know, the amazing impact that our course has had on millennials and younger. And when I go to a class that is, where millennials have taken this course, they will talk about how much impact it had on them, how it's opened up this confidence that they've had, how it's enabled them to do things that they didn't think they could do. And so a big part of what we know is that what we do is highly relevant to millennials today, as it is to all people, because part of what Dale Carnegie discovered when he wrote How to Influence People is timeless insights and principles about human interaction and how we're wired. So the first part of this is what we do is completely relevant really to all people. The second part then is how do we really communicate that? And I really think that part of it is telling our story better in a more effective way, in a visual way, in a way that relates. You know, we've got to go to people where they are. So that means, you know, communicating via different platforms and media and so forth. And also, you know, not being afraid to go out and really tell the story of Dale Carnegie and how we change people and businesses.
Blooper.
Okay. On May 21st. I give up.
That was great. May 21st. Ooh, we killed a wabbit.
Shh, and wabbit. Thank you, Joe. All right. As we're talking about the fourth anniversary show for the HR Power Hour, there were two final shows in June that I want to highlight here for you today. First was on June 18th. Jean Paquette and Pam McGafflin from the Maine Department of Labor talked about the new FLSA rules. We've been waiting for these, ladies and gentlemen, and they're going to go into effect December 1st, 2016. Let's hear some of the highlights.
As people have been discussing the fact that they've been waiting for the rule to finally come out, the rule finally came out and it will take effect December 1st of this year. The rule basically states that if you have classified your employee as an exempt employee from overtime, even though they may be paid in salary or they are paid on salary, salary is a method of payment. What we need to focus on is whether you classify them as exempt from being able to get overtime or not. The threshold for many years has been $23,660. So if an employee was considered exempt, if they were classified as exempt, if they made any more than 23,660, they would be exempt from overtime. So that was the low threshold. What the new rule is saying is that now they have moved that threshold to $47,476. And what that means is that if you're going to be exempt from overtime from the law, you have to make more than $47,476 a year. But it's better to say, really, that you have to make more than $913 a week. Because if you focus just on a full year salary, it doesn't necessarily take into account those seasonal jobs that they have exempt employees that they pay on a weekly basis.
Blooper.
Moving on and upward. All right. Thank you, Gene and Pam. All right. And the last show that I want to talk about in 2016 is the one that happened on June 25th. Brian Bouchard, an employment attorney with Sheehan Finney, talks about e-cigarettes, unisex bathrooms, and prayer. New accommodations. These are things that are very relevant in today's HR world. So let's listen to Brian and hear some of the highlights.
I cannot stress record keeping enough, and this is a personal battle that I sometimes have with employers, to document everything, keep records of everything, even if it's just a small little email that you're going to print, sign off on, and put in the employee's personnel file. And the reason documentation and record keeping becomes really paramount in these types of situations is number one, you want a record of who you gave an accommodation to. So that way, if another employee comes, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years down the road, you can look back into the files and say, okay, we gave an accommodation or we didn't give accommodation in this specific instance. Therefore, if this new employee requests accommodation, we should model our current practice on what was done previously, so long as you're still within the legal strictures of the law. In other words, you want to aim for consistency, and that's what documentation does. The other thing that documentation does, and this is why it's very important, is that the ADA and Title VII for religious accommodations requires that employers engage in, like I said before, the interactive dialogue, the interactive process with their employees. And having a record of that can often show that an employer has been reasonable, was willing to work with the employee to find some sort of accommodation. And if an employer finds itself in a lawsuit over this issue, those records can be the make or break in the case.
Blooper.
He is an important...
Blooper.
Thank you, Brian. And I want to thank all of you once again for listening to the HR Power Hour's 4th anniversary radio show. I've truly enjoyed being here each and every week. And I know that you've enjoyed listening to these great guests and getting great tips. Please keep those emails coming. You can go to hrpowerhour.com and connect with me directly. Or you can go to dciullo@cmacareer.com. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. So off to our 5th year. And again, I want to thank our sponsors. Verrill Dana, Jackson Lewis, Rudman Winchell, Sheehan Finney, StrategicHR.com and JobsInTheUSA.com. We're ready for another exciting year. Great local, regionals, and national guests. So come back next week on the next HR Power Hour.